You're listening to Visions of Education,
a podcast where we take a look at big ideas in education from different perspectives.
Hi, I'm Michael Milton, a high school teacher from Massachusetts.
And I'm Dan Kretke, an education professor in Texas.
We're here to help bridge the gap between educators in the K-12
and those professors in higher ed. We hope this podcast will help bring those fuzzy ideas in education into focus.
All right, Dan. Let's talk thematics. Do you teach thematically? Is that something that you're into, or are you more about the chronological sense of things?
I do like the order of chronology, but it's too disorganized, right? Like thing after thing, and they don't make any sense, right?
Like you kind of have to keep popping back in time to then be like, oh, well, then you got to do this, and then you keep going forward, and so. Even though you're going chronologically, you're still going back and forth.
Yeah, I wish we could make current events be thematic, right? Like I can just choose in like, you know, March, everyone's only going to address this current event issue. And that's the only thing that can happen in the world, right?
Like so in the world, really focus... so it can only be about like climate change. And so everything right. about climate change is going to be in March. And then for April, you're going to segue out to something.
Right, because nothing else is allowed to happen. Right. We're just going to put a pause on it and focus on it. And that way I can read that month and really like immerse myself in it and be ready.
Yeah. You'd be so ready for it. Yeah. And that way you can also do some advanced planning. You know, if you know it's going to be climate month, you can then, you know, focus on that.
Yeah. I think it would be helpful. I'd be prepared. But yeah, I tried to do some thematic teaching in my classroom. It always made sense to me when I was an AP government teacher. Ooh. We read 1984. Oh, that was our summer read. And I would try to take themes from the book and then integrate them throughout the year. And so I like tried to like match them up. I was able to kind of do it in a way where like it fit the curriculum, but we did have themes that were coming out of the book. So that helped to give some interest in totalitarian fascist surveillance states.
Oh, you know, see, I like the sequel 1985, which was just really all about Care Bears. It was a weird year. Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize. That's when I found the Care Bears.
Yeah, that's probably not going to make the cut, but we'll see. I don't know. Maybe it's your day. Well, I feel like I haven't seen much emphasis on thematic teaching, and you just don't see it. Like it pops up now and then. Like I've heard it before, but it seems like we always roll back to chronology. So I feel like we need somebody just to help us remember, like what would it look like to do thematic teaching well.
Well, what if we could actually have four somebodies?
I think that would be helpful. Hopefully there's some themes we can identify in their personalities and traits, because that would be better for me to organize my thoughts. But with that, we'd like to welcome in Jeremiah Klebo, Caroline Sheffield, Timothy Littner, and Ali Whitford. Welcome.
Hello.
So can you all tell us a little bit about your backgrounds in education? Who are we talking to? And preferably, Michael, could you take some thematic notes here?
Right now.
So my name is Jeremiah Klebo. I'm an associate professor of social studies education at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. I've been in that position for 11 years where I've been training middle and high school social studies teachers. I also was a social studies teacher in East Tennessee for several years before I moved into my current position.
Hi, I'm Caroline Sheffield. I'm an associate professor at the University of Louisville in Louisville, Kentucky, where I prepare social studies teachers, both elementary and middle and secondary. And I've been here since 2009. So I'm coming on my 15th year here at U of L. But prior to that, I was a middle school social studies teacher in Florida, first in Jacksonville and then in Tampa, which is where I did my doctoral work at USF. And pretty much while I was teaching, I spent a lot of time using trade books throughout and looking and seeing what kind of themes we could find in what we were teaching.
Can you tell us what you mean by trade books? What constitutes a trade book? I'm guessing that these are books you've traded with your friends.
Well, there is a lot of that going on, but these trade books is the term that's used to describe books that are not textbooks or academic treaties. So things that you could buy on Amazon that most people would want to buy, not people like us. Like it's not the doing history book, but it's more about the books like, it's more like a picture book or a graphic novel or a chapter book. Those are all examples of trade books. You can buy them at the bookstore. You can buy them on Amazon. You can check them out of the library, but not the academic books that we typically do, and certainly not the textbooks that our kids are having to endure in classrooms throughout the U.S.
Note to listeners: don't trade the library books. Those are not yours. You have to check those back in.
I'll jump in real quick. I am Tim Littner. I'm a professor of social studies education at the University of South Carolina, Aiken. I have been in that position for 21 years. And prior to that, I taught social studies, all grade levels, high school in Los Angeles.
Thank you, Tim. I remember reading your work years ago on focusing on disability in social studies. So it's great to meet you.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad you and my mom are the only two people.
We actually read it together. I'm surprised she didn't introduce us sooner.
She did drop your name a couple years ago, and I didn't make the connection until right now. So she's very sly. But thank the two of you for being the only two that have read that.
Well, my mom doesn't read my research papers, so. Hi, everyone. My name is Allie Whitford. I'm an assistant professor at Hope College in Holland, Michigan, and I teach elementary methods in literacy and social studies. And so I love talking about how we can use these trade books to teach social issues. I am a former elementary teacher of 8 years, and I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
And friend of the pod. Just was on a few episodes ago talking about gender stereotypes in elementary.
Right. Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's been so long.
So Michael, before we go to our next question, we learn about all the wonderful work everyone's been doing. Pick up on any themes there? I noticed all humans.
Yeah, I got that too.
Number one, you got to count it all, right? You got to get credit for everything here. You get points, I think, for each theme you need. I did notice a social studies theme.
Yeah. And in the country, I feel like they're over here, but mostly over here.
Michael's moving his hand in front of the screen at an angle.
It's curved.
It's a curved angle. No credit. You do not get credit for that. I don't even know what that meant.
yeah.
But so you all are here to talk to us about a research project you've been working on. And so the title you gave me to describe this project was Thematically Teaching Public Issues with Trade Books. And so can you tell us a little bit about how this project first came together? You know, I think some people who've never been on like a big group research project just might even be interested in starting there and then talk about, you know, let's get into what happened.
Yeah, Dan. I'm often influenced by a lot of pop culture, and in 2020, I just finished reading Seven Soldiers of Victory by DC Comics. The comic book story follows seven characters that never meet, but through their collective actions, they save the universe from an alien invasion. There's always an alien invasion. That's what I learned from being 40 years of a comic book fan. But these characters are not name brand characters that a person on the street would know. They're lesser known characters. We're not talking Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, characters like that. And it hit me that historical figures across time and sometimes the same eras work in concert, even though they may not meet, to work for certain public issues similar to what happens in the Seven Soldiers of Victory. I was reminded about an argument made in the first chapter with Ronald Evans and David Warren Sache's edited book, Handbook on Teaching Social Issues, that social studies educators and scholars should teach public issues thematically. And that's what really activated my mind about teaching public issues thematically. And I just met this lady sitting here next to me, and I knew her affinity for trade books. So I said, what if we look at teaching public issues thematically with social studies trade books? Caroline and I were asked during the 2021-2022 academic year to thematically teach the public issue of racial discrimination faced in the African-American community in a sixth grade U.S. history classroom from Reconstruction through the Birmingham Children's March. The charter school where we implemented the project at over 90% African American population. So the theme of teaching racial discrimination was very relevant to the community in which the school was housed.
But Dan, if you want to know how it kind of the project even started even before then, Jeremy contacted me with an email, said, this was after his seven soldiers, said, I think we should do a project together. And so we started writing together, and through our collaboration with some early on projects using graphic novels and some with picture books, we realized that there was this idea that we needed to take a look at it in a bigger sense and work with schools and try to see if what kind of research we could get out of it. And we hooked up with the school through one of his contacts in Birmingham. And that's how we ended up at the school where we were working with 93% actually African-American percent students, almost all on free and reduced lunch, and thematically teaching about civil rights and and racial equality in that sixth grade classroom.
So Dan, what we would do for the 2021-2022 academic year, there were nine separate trade books. Each one was about a different historical figure, like Ida B. Wells, the Harlem Hellfighters, Frederick Douglass. So throughout their curriculum, we had a trade book about civil rights issues, and we would link each 1 week project to the following projects. And we went from the students from the beginning of the academic year to the end of the academic year with this project. So we built up a lot of good grace, as the kids called me the book man, because I would bring in stacks of trade books about different historical figures over the course of the academic year. And as I mentioned earlier, in the Seven Soldiers of Victory, it was comic book characters that were characters not focused on very much. We adopted a similar method for a bottom-up history to look at local civil rights activists that were very active in the civil rights movement to address issues. And we had such positive results from the 2021-2022 academic year, we were asked to come back in for the 2022-2023 academic year. And we wanted to switch it up a little bit, because while we did focus on civil rights issues, the school where we worked at had a huge emphasis on change agents that address public issues. So while we focused the first year on just teaching racial discrimination and civil rights issues, we also wanted to broaden that and look at women that advocated for change. And that's where we started thinking, we need to bring some people into this project, Caroline and I. And I'd met Allie through some of our collaborations on projects and knew of her work on teaching women's rights issues with trade books. And I know Tim had worked on some similar type projects. And that's really where this project starts that we're talking about in the podcast, as year two, to teach thematically public issues and look at people that were change agents for issues connected to civil rights, but also issues connected to women's rights issues from Reconstruction, the Gilded Age, and ending at the Progressive Era.
I thought it was funny when you said we're talking about the seven soldiers, about how they never met. The first time we were all four in the same room was this past NCSS's conference. But up until that point in time, the four of us had never actually all been in the same room together. So we were almost like the soldiers that he was talking about that were working towards change and trying to make things better, but had actually never physically met in three dimensions. So
you're like Nick Fury putting together your own little Avengers team to tackle this.
He is Nick Fury.
Yeah, I did have the email where I said I'm assembling the academic Avengers. I sent that at some point.
No lie, he did. I still have that email in my email library. I mean, email account where he was assembling the Avengers. So once we did that, and we brought Allie and Tim on, but that's how it started. And this process evolved over time.
I just want to know what happened next. I feel like I just got Infinity War and now I need Endgame.
Yes.
So how did the project evolve?
Well, the teacher that we were working with at the school, first of all, we have to say she is an amazing teacher. Absolutely. I mean, she's a rock star. But she was also very generous in allowing us to come in and work with her kids and open up her classroom to us. But the summer before that academic year, Allie and Tim and Jeremy and I gathered together on Zoom multiple times throughout the summer and worked with the teacher deciding which books to use. And one of the things I think you didn't mention was what we found in the first year, and was very interesting to me because my area of interest is in the use of trade books, specifically multimodal trade books, ones that have a lot of pictures as well as text. The kids were like ambivalent at best about the chapter books that we used. So we had one that was written called Dark Sky Rising that was written by Henry Louis Gates. We had the Harlem Hellfighters by Walter Dean Myers. And we had the one on Fred Shuttlesworth, Black and White, right? Mm-hmm. Those were the three trade books we used. I mean, chapter books we used. But the rest were picture books. And the kids absolutely flocked to the picture books. They loved them. That's where, when we were seeing the work they were doing the best work with the topics that had picture books associated with them. So in discussion with the teacher, we decided that the second year of the project was going to focus on using picture books. So we had to figure out which of the picture books would we want to use. And so the four of us did some research, looked at different types of picture books that would work in this curriculum, came together, and then made some decisions. And that's kind of how it started in the summer. And then Tim and Allie took the lead on developing the lesson ideas for the second year.
We also put a big emphasis on activities and assessments to develop students' disciplinary literacy, thinking, and argumentation skills in civics and history, to a lesser extent, geography and economics, in the ways outlined in the C3 framework by the National Council for the Social Studies. And that came through really well in year one, because 90% of these kids in August 2021 could not write a complete sentence, mm-hmm. because we saw the impact of COVID and mm-hmm. in the local communities. By the end of the 2021-2022 academic year, all these kids were writing half-page essays to full-page essays with references to support their arguments. So they were able to make evidence-based claims and, to some extent, develop their civic, economic, geographic, and historical thinking skills over the course of these projects. It was to the point in February when we looked at the Tulsa Race Massacre, the kids we worked with would not even claim their writing from the beginning of the year, because they'd made such progress from where they could not write a complete sentence to where they're writing essays about the Tulsa Race Massacre. And we wanted to continue and build on that in this project that we're talking about in year two, to also get at more of women's rights issues, as well as continuing to focus on civil rights issues.
Not to mention, it was just getting too big for us to try to do on our own.
Yeah.
It was getting to be too much for two of us to do, that we wanted to bring great people in.
So how did you distinguish between where women's rights issues starts and civil rights issues stops, right? Of course, there's like probably a Venn diagram there where they are overlapping in many cases. And so how did you all think about that?
So I think that's the exciting thing about thematic teaching, because we don't have to draw that line of where one ends and one begins. So what was exciting is that we did the series I worked on, we focused on Jane Addams, Ida B. Wells, and Clara Lumlich, who's a little less well known, but led the largest strike at the time in the early 1900s, looking for better working rights for workers. And so we didn't necessarily have to, all of these women fought different causes. All of them were involved in fighting injustice in one way or another. And so the great thing with that thematic teaching is we had that umbrella of creating change. And so while my focus, I did focus on three women, they all created change in different ways. So I didn't have to separate them out from thinking about civil rights issues, right? We could connect to the other units that were more focused on that.
So I'm just kind of curious. So, okay, if I understand the project correctly, what the primary idea here is to find trade books that would interest students, bring those into classrooms. But what does the like day-to-day look like? Are these surrounded by certain types of lessons? Are you just dropping in and doing the trade book part, but the teacher is like saying, hey, I'm covered all of this, if you all can stop in on Tuesday? Like, how does this, like, give me the day-to-day and what it would look like to participate in this project.
So Dan, we sat down with the teacher and we did an initial sketch with how we envisioned each of the projects. And this was similar to year one. And then we met with the teacher on Zoom, and Tim and I led the initial meeting with the civil rights projects with Frederick Douglass, which he can go in much more depth because that was one of the projects he developed. And then Allie and Caroline met with the teacher on Zoom to talk about the three women that we explored.
And each one of the each one of the picture books was used as an anchor text. It wasn't the only material that was used. It happened to be the starting point. And then we collaborated with the teacher with looking for and helped provide primary and secondary sources that could be used to augment and as ancillary materials to try to do things like corroboration, look for perspective, and where the picture book became just the starting point. And we, all of that was collaborated and designed in conjunction with the practicing teacher, the teacher of the class, whose classroom we were working in, who again was a rock star. So
you definitely have to corroborate your sources when teaching about Frederick Douglass, because he wrote 3 autobiographies. So you have to check and see against his himself in years later and see if he agrees with himself.
Dan read a book about Frederick Douglass a couple of years ago, and he likes to, I think this
have,
is.
Have I mentioned it on this podcast before?
It's a good book, but Dan really wants to know more about the Frederick Douglass stuff.
So Frederick Douglass, so really what we try to do is working with 103 sixth graders who are absolutely amazing, just absolutely amazing kids. Same school that we use, 96 of the 103 were African-American students, 65 minutes of social studies every day. So we had a captive audience. What and kind of dovetailing off what Caroline said, what we really wanted to do was use trade books as an anchor. We wanted to surround them with much more interactive inquiry-based discovery, social studies, rather than just having kids read, because we know that that is just not going to pique their interest. It's not going to engage them. It's not going to serve as a mirror when we're talking about civic responsibility and civic action, because really that's kind of a byproduct of what we wanted to do as well, is have our trade books serve as a vehicle for our young learners to take action themselves. And so Frederick Douglass was the first one. We had 6 trade books over 6 weeks. It took us 8 weeks to fulfill, but that's okay. We tried to stick with the week. And really what we wanted to do, particularly with Frederick Douglass, which was the first unit, was to kind of situate. And I think that's what we did in all of our 6 units, is to situate before we took a deep dive. So really what we did for that first unit, real quick, Dan, was to talk just generally about slavery. We had them do graphic organizers were embedded throughout all 6 projects, because we really wanted to see and capture kids writing. And we were very consistent with that. We were very systemic with the writing that we had them do. So real quick, what I did for what I proposed to Katie, which was our partner teacher, was to have them do on day one, real simple, what's called problem solution effect. So what's the problem, right? What's the problem of slavery? And then the kids are brainstorming, they're working their way through it. And this is even before we talked about Frederick Douglass, because we wanted to situate the learner again before we took them using the trade book. And what we found, particularly with that exercise, is it just got the kids thinking about slavery in general. And it didn't need necessarily to be precise. It didn't need necessarily to be contentious. It just was an opportunity to engage our students. And then the next day, so day two, we would start off with a trade book. And we all used the same graphic organizer when we introduced the trade book, the same graphic organizer. And that is something that we collected and analyzed. So when Allie talks about kind of how we came to the thematic conclusions that we did, we captured systemic information over those, well, 8 weeks, using the same graphic organizer attached to each individual trade book. Boy, we had for Frederick Douglass, there were videos embedded. There were Frederick Douglass body project, where the students had to take the information that they're learning throughout the week, and they created a physical body of Frederick Douglass, where there were particular talking points that they had to fill in. Like what was an issue? What was a challenge that he faced? What was an obstacle that he overcame? So it wasn't just creative drawing on this particular visual. It really was having kids parse out information, either from the trade book, the supplemental information that we provided, and then have that kind of visual anchor. And what we found is the kids absolutely loved that project. We started it on day 2 and they chipped away at it until day 5. It was absolutely fantastic. And the kids were quite proud of their work. What we did for the very last culminating experiences, we really wanted our students to take action. We wanted to see them see themselves within the trade books. So we wanted to talk about civic actors, civic actresses. And what the students did is they wrote a letter to the mayor of their particular town, arguing for kind of taking the perspective that Frederick Douglass took, is arguing against slavery. And they had to make 3 points that they learned through the week of, you know, the contentiousness of slavery. They had to offer 3 solutions, and they had to write a formal letter like a petition. And the Katie was really, really good at kind of couching this as, this is what participatory social studies is all about. It's taking civic action. So they read about Frederick Douglass. They understood what he did. They understood his path. And then in some small, but we think really powerful way, they mirrored that by writing their own fictitious letter to the mayor of, and Katie collected them and, you know, kind of fictitiously mailed them off, which was really, really fun. And then each unit kind of built on that sense of civic action, which was extremely powerful. And what we found, particularly with the writing, and that we found with their kind of civic action taking, is their writing increased throughout this project. We realized that since week 1 to week 8, their writing, just as it did the previous year, just absolutely exploded. And it was rich, and it was deep, and it was critical, and it was purposeful. For 6th graders, we could not have been more proud of this group of 103 sixth graders who really stepped up and sunk their teeth into it. Because as Caroline said, it wasn't just reading a chapter book. It was engaging them, using that anchor text, surrounding it with multiple layers of different kind of content, and then pushing these sixth graders to say, you have a right to take action. What kind of action are you going to take? We could not have been more proud of these kids.
And of course, Frederick Douglass powerfully used the pen, right, in his life, and was one of the great writers. Another form of civic action that we often don't teach kids is that Frederick Douglass taught us you're allowed to beat up racists. He did that throughout his life too, many times. You know, everyone knows about Edward Covey when he beat him up, but later in his life, other people would be really racist to him, and he'd just be like, do you want to fight? That was one of the most fascinating things I learned from David Blight's biography of him. I was kind of like, how do we not have a superhero movie about Frederick Douglass? He would just fight racist people on call. So, kids, civic action.
Yeah. Well, I think that's something that you may need to create, Dan. I think it's just waiting for you to write.
Yeah, I probably should not do that, but tell me more. Tell me more about this. Tell me about the themes, right? So we're talking thematic here. I'm hearing about really good teaching. I'm hearing about, so we've got like civil rights, we've got women's rights, of course, intersecting. What are the themes that are coming out? Is it just the broader topics, or are there specific themes that came out that students identified? Or did you all already identify those themes?
Well, Dan, one of the things I think we probably need to say is how we define thematic teaching. And it's a little bit different than what people typically think. I will tell you, as a classroom teacher, I was not a huge fan of the idea of thematic teaching, because I envisioned it as, okay, we're going to do the theme of war, and we're going to do the theme of compromise, and we're going to, and it would be jumping back and forth. It wasn't, as a classroom teacher, that wasn't something that I was really enthralled with, because I didn't think my kids could really see the connections as easily. When Jeremy and I started talking, he had a different interpretation of what thematic teaching was. And it was one that I could absolutely see teachers getting on board with. And Jeremy, you need to say what that is.
Dan, when we looked at thematic teaching, we looked at the teacher's curriculum chronologically, realizing that the teacher, more often than not, is very attached to the chronological approach. So we did teach broader themes of racial discrimination, women's rights issues, but we taught it where it fell within the curriculum. So Frederick Douglass would fall at the first part of the sixth grade social studies curriculum. And as we moved into Reconstruction, which was the next unit in this teacher's curriculum, that's when we would teach racial discrimination using a different project. We would look at The Amazing Age of John Roy Lynch to look at Reconstruction. That was our second trade book and second individual. So as each unit came, And there was a person that was appropriate that advocated for either civil rights issues or women's rights issues. That's where we included that 1 week project. So we built this over the course of the teacher's chronological year, but the kids consistently made thematic connections back to women's rights issues or civil rights issues. So the students, a lot of times with little prompting for us, from us, we connect John Roy Lynch to Frederick Douglass or the different women that Allie and Caroline designed the projects about after we did the three gentlemen on civil rights issues.
And so, of course, part of the hope here, right, is that as students identify and see, for example, how like anti-Black racial discrimination has taken place throughout like American history, that they're able to identify it more clearly and learn how different people have confronted it, addressed it in the past to gain hopefully courage as civic actors to address and confront it today, which of course is the challenging part, right? I always say to my students, everyone likes their civil rights in the past because it takes moral courage to address those issues of the present.
That's what was fascinating in year one and two of the project. With little to no prompting from the teacher or Caroline or me when we went into the school, the students would connect what they're learning from the past into the present with the vestiges of racial discrimination or gender discrimination. That was one of the fascinating things that we consistently saw.
And one of the things we also, with our choices of individuals, yes, some of them are very famous, but Clara Limlick, for example, I mean, I didn't even know who she was until I started reading, until we found the trade book about her. And it was nice to show the students individuals in history that they may not have heard of, who may have lives that didn't seem particularly extraordinary, but who through their actions made change. And that, and so while we're talking about civil rights and we were talking about women's rights, the overarching theme is this: individuals can affect change. And we were looking at individuals who affected change. And so I think that helped too. And that also helped the kids. And like we said at the beginning, the school had that as a focus. They focused on having their kids be agents of change. So we did that in conjunction with school goals, but it helped them to see their place in the possibility. And I mean, of course, they're in sixth grade. We're not talking about they were getting ready to completely create a whole new world system, but they could see how their role in society could impact others.
One thing I'll add on to that, to your point, Dan, is that a lot of times we had a lot of great findings, and I'm happy to talk about as many or as little of them. But one finding we did have was that students really did not, by the end of the unit, they did not shy away from naming both broad systems of oppression and also individual acts. So they talked about people being racist today and in the past, and they talk about racist systems. And so they were able to speak at a big societal level, but also they were able to speak past that idea that we sometimes have in elementary school of oppression being like one person being mean to someone else, right? And just really minimizing it. They were able to talk about it in a big systematic way. And they were also able to talk about the negative and oppressive ideologies that people hold and the importance of challenging those. So I think that was one of the findings, to Caroline's point, that was something that came out from teaching them about being agents of change, was to teach them what do we change? What are problems out there in the world that have existed over time, and how have people acted against them, and how can you also do that as well? So it was really cool to see.
And Dan, real quick, we did not have any preconceived notions of what these kids were going to come up with. And to Allie's point, that point of their expansion of what oppression is, that systemic understanding was just, it floored us. Not that we didn't think these kids were capable enough, but for sixth graders to think that broadly and that deeply and that systemically over the weeks long project was just, it was frankly jaw dropping.
The project sounds great. Like, this sounds like a great thing. Like, I feel like we should do this. What advice do you have for teachers who want to bring in trade books? Like, what obstacles might they have? And how do you see, you know, teachers and other people who are doing research on this can overcome those?
Well, one of the obstacles a lot of people have is cost, because trade books are not cheap. Luckily, there are options, of course, your library and such. And you do not necessarily have to have an entire class set of books. We did. We chose to purchase, not a full class set, but we chose to purchase 15 copies of each book so the kids could partner read as, or look at them as partners when they were being read aloud. But a teacher could use a book as a whole class read aloud and have only one copy of it. And that would work. Another a potential issue is trying to figure out which books do they want to use. That can, it's overwhelming. I mean, I happen to love social studies trade books. I mean, I have an absolute obsession with picture books and graphic novels. And so, yeah, I can come up with five or six different ones about each topic, but that's not what most teachers can do. So I think what the teachers, if they haven't explored the opportunity, the lists that are out there already available to us through the National Council for Social Studies, like the Notable Trade Book List, also the Carter G. Woodson
Award, Septima Clark Award.
There's already been a lot of vetting of books out there. And so you don't have to feel like you're in this on your own as far as trying to find appropriate books. And another source that I've actually used quite a bit is Epic, the online digitized library that's available to teachers for free, actually. And Unspeakable is actually on Epic. And what's nice is that if teachers want to embed assessments into the reading of the book, they can, which is it's a fantastic platform. So that's some different ways. But I think one of the biggest issues with teachers is trying to figure out which book, which is appropriate, and also how do I afford it?
I will piggyback and agree. I think the NCSS Notable Trade Books right now is one of the first places I go because they're so well organized and it makes it very easy. It's such a lengthy list, but it's well organized. So I can quickly and easily find something that I want to explore further. And I also would just reminds or reinforce the idea that it's so wonderful when we can have a copy for every student. And I love that so much. But when we can't, we don't have those resources. I know I live in Michigan. We have the Michigan e-library program where I can borrow a book from any library in the state, right? There are YouTube read alouds of so many books. And so it's not ideal, but it's better than nothing. The best, of course, is when you can get that book in every kid's hands. But when you can't, don't give up on it because there are creative ways to get that literacy in your classroom.
And I think we need to rethink their purpose in our K-12 classrooms. So often we think of trade books as embedded in K-5 classrooms. This was a middle school classroom. And all four of us are advocates of trade books in all classrooms. So I would say be brave. We all like to be read to. This isn't carpet time. It's a purposeful, strategic use of a material that is used to prompt and engage students to think. And so for our middle school and secondary colleagues, please be brave, take a stab at it, and you will be surprised at how engaged your middle schoolers and high schoolers are in a really rich trade book.
I think another thing that's worth mentioning with our project that came out of it, that Allie really did a great job of unpacking when we were looking at this data, was the idea that these social studies disciplines do not work in isolation from each other. I think often we have a silo mindset of history is here, geography is in its own little box, economics is in its box. But these kids consistently articulated interdisciplinary arguments with civics and history. And when we looked at Brave Girl, they did a fantastic job of connecting the oppressive systems to economic thinking, literacy, and argumentation skills.
Yeah, we need to get all those disciplines out of the box. Who even put them in there? How big are these boxes?
So Dan has been trying to get all of the titles of the books that you've been talking about, and of course, links to the NCSS Notable Trade Book List in the show notes for folks who are listening. What is the title of your article, and where can I get access to it? Because it seems like I should probably just read it. Not that, yeah.
It's supposed to be released in an upcoming issue of the Journal of Social Studies Research in 2024. We're waiting to get more specifics on specifically when. We're hoping sooner than later on that release.
Oh, man, that's a while. I guess it's just around the corner.
Yeah, it's actually.
What year is it now?
It's 2023, and 2024 is the next year, and it's actually December. So next month will be 2024. We are almost there. And yet, Back to the Future lied about so many things. No hoverboards. I have many problems.
There were flying cars in the movie. Why is everyone obsessed with hoverboards? The cars flew.
I want like, a tiny pizza that I can put in a microwave and it just expands.
Self-lacing shoes, although I don't really tie shoes anymore.
Yeah.
So that's just, I just slip in.
I just like to be able to leave my car on garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. So while the inventors continue to fail, at least the social studies teachers are coming through with some themes that will help students learn about how to make a better world. So we are so thankful for you all to join us on this podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Yes. Thank you so much. It's always so fun to be here.
And we're so happy you came back.
Is there anywhere online that you all want to share so we can find your work or connect with you? Who's on X? Just kidding.
Not me. I'm avoiding it.
I know. I still have an account, but I am saying it sarcastically. It's hanging by a thread.
It is. It is.
I did pull up the official title of the article because I was asked that a second ago. The title is Portraits of Change, Using Picture Books to Engage Students in Thematic Civic Education is the official title of the article scheduled to be released in the Journal of Social Studies Research.
It's a good title.
This will be one
Portraits
of the...
Change. That's really good.
Yeah, one of the best show notes you'll ever see. So when you're listening to this, jump online, check out the show notes. We'll have that title there. And the second the article comes out, Visions of Ed will be the first podcast to update our show notes with the article. No one will beat us.
Thank you.
We will be first. Yes. So is there anywhere we can find anyone's work online? Of course, except besides this show notes page that will house many of the resources you've talked about.
Well, a lot of Jeremy's and my stuff from the first year has been already published. There's been articles in Research of Contemporary Education. There's been the history teacher's got one coming out soon.
The social studies has one on Thurgood Marshall.
So there's, and Jeremy and I did some work before this with using trade books to teach other things. And so we've got a pretty extensive, probably about 5 or 6 different articles on using either picture books or graphic novels to teach social studies. So this is, I'm not kidding when I say I'm obsessed with using picture books and graphic novels. This is my current obsession and it's going to be for a while.
And Allie does such a great job of using trade books with women's rights issues. When I reviewed some of her work from the dissertation and manuscript she submitted when I was a guest editor, I loved her work so much that I reached out to her and wanted to bring her onto this project because the focus of women's rights issues, I thought, was something thematically had a great deal of potential. So she can speak more to the different venues she's been published in the last several years.
Well, thank you for the kind words and for inviting me to work with you all, because that's been an amazing privilege and I love it. I think, similarly, some of the social studies journals that my work on women's rights and gender more broadly, one is what I spoke on here earlier, which is the article in Theory and Research in Social Education and similar journals to that. I'm also just always happy to talk and nerd out about education. So my email address and the show notes, please, you know, anyone, whoever would like to talk more, please feel free to reach out because I'm always happy to talk education.
And Dan, I'm just a hapless appendage.
That's not true.
Well,
every group has to have one.
And Tim has an email account, I suspect, if you have questions for him.
I do indeed. I do indeed. At least
Dan, speaking for all of us, we would be happy for anybody to reach out, as Allie said, to talk about social studies education and education issues in general.
And each one of us has our own area of interest. I mean, if you're interested in using trade books, please email me. I'm more than happy to talk. I'll talk about it all day long, just like I know Allie would as well. That's one of the areas where we've bonded.
I'm noticing a theme, Michael. Enthusiasm for trade books.
Nice. Nice.
So we will get all of this in the show notes. And just thank you all so much for joining us today. We definitely hope to continue the discussion, you know, online, on the phone, in Tim's email, where, you know, however this works out, we'll keep it going.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. We're all about sharing the learning at the Visions of Education podcast. If you're doing something fun or creative in education, or you just want to talk, and we understand, we're there. We're at Visions of Ed on Twitter or X. Sometimes we're on Facebook, and other times we're just kind of hanging out. And of course, if you haven't already, and seriously, please subscribe to Visions of Education podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere you'd like us to be.
Are we really in any of those places anymore? I feel like we're, basically this is a theme for us is lying right now. Cause I don't know if we're in those places and I don't know the last time we read a 5-star review. So we're going to have to start coming to truth here. But if you read it, write us a 5-star review. We'll amend it. We'll make amends. We're going to read it on the air. It's going to happen. We're going to get on all the places.
We are on the X thing. Like we're on that. The visions of that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I am still on Twitter, but I'm just going to say I'm Dan Krutka. I'm just a person.
Okay. And I'm Michael Milton, also a person still.
See, thematic. Until next time, this is the Visions of Education podcast.
Signing off. Thanks, Zach.